Hi, wine fans. This is Alan Goldfarb. Glad to be here with Lynn on iWine Radio. You can check out my column on tablehopper.com. It's called Checking Lists, A Critical Look at Restaurant Wine.
Thank you for listening to iWine Radio. I'm Lynn Crelo Chamberlain.
Welcome to Wine and Dine.
I always have so many questions for Alan Goldfarb, who is a blogger for tablehopper.com. His blog is Checking Lists, A Critical Look at Restaurant Wine Lists. And today, he's going to talk to us about a brand new column that he's publishing about Absinthe Restaurant and Arlequin Wine Shop in Hayes Valley. And Alan, the first thing I want to ask you, because I'm not from there, is where is Hayes Valley?
Hayes Valley is right near City Hall, right behind City Hall in San Francisco, and also it's in the theater district, so the Opera House is there, Davies Symphony Hall is there, and there are several other theaters there.
So this would be a fantastic location for a restaurant and a wine shop.
Well, absolutely. Heretofore, up until about 10 years ago, it was a blighted area, and now it's maybe one of the two hottest restaurant and bar scenes in San Francisco. So, yes, it has become completely gentrified with high-end clothing shops and shoe stores and every other storefront is a restaurant or a bar. And it's within two blocks of all of those theaters that I mentioned.
So a lot of people leaving theaters probably go out for drinks and a bite. But when you first told me that you were writing about absinthe, the first thing that came to my mind was, whoa, you're doing a tasting on absinthe.
Oh, yes.
Does this restaurant, I know that the focus, of course, is wine, always is wine, but do they offer several different brands of absinthe? Why the name absinthe?
Well, yes, they do offer absinthe. And they originally, and it's one of the two pillars that gentrified Hayes Valley. It's Hayes Street Grill, which is a seafood restaurant, was the first one, and then Absinthe. They both came in about 10 years ago before there was really anything there. So Absinthe fancied themselves a French brasserie. The menu was deep into French food, and I guess Absinthe is a good French conjures everything French, and I guess that's the reason why.
You were blown away with the wine list. I mean, it's just a huge selection.
Yes. So when, as I said, when they first opened, I think 16 years ago, actually, not 10 years ago, I misspoke, they were really very Francophile in there, the food, the atmosphere, and the wines. The last couple of years, they've changed the thrust somewhat, and they're getting away from heavily French-style food. I don't mean heavy French food, but
brasserie-style food.
Brasserie, yeah. They're getting away by adding things like a pastrami sandwich.
Oh, whoa!
Which is, I think it's ridiculous because it's got mozzarella on it, and it's got jalapenos on it. I mean, that to me is not a pastrami sandwich. Anyway, I do digress. But so the wine list remains from the old absinthe, and it's while it's fantastic for a wine geek such as myself, it just does not fit with what they're trying to do now, where the top entree is $37, but most of the entrees are in the 20s, in the $20 range, high $20 range. And this wine list is fit for a $200-$300 per person restaurant, a high-end restaurant, and it's certainly not a high-end restaurant any longer. But as I say, for wine geeks, it's off the charts. It's incredible. There's something like 735 Burgundies on the list.
Oh, my heaven.
725. There's 125 Merceaux. There's 75 Chablis. There are about 40 Napa Valley Cabernets.
So, and a lot of half bottles, you say.
And 70 half bottles, which is incredible. It's just wonderful to have so many half bottles. There's nothing cheap there in those 70 bottles. But nonetheless, these are serious wine folk, and they keep this wine list, I guess, because they have most of the wines right next door at their wine shop and cafe, Arlequin, as you mentioned.
Okay.
And so you can go in the shop and get a wine there and open it and have sandwiches and cafe-style food, and they'll charge you only $5 for corkage. If you bring it into Absinthe, they'll charge you half of the usual corkage fee of $25.
Now, is it a different ownership than it was originally?
Well, you know, I don't think so, but I think it's the same group, might be different, but they've expanded. They have a couple of other restaurants in San Francisco, the Boxing Room. They have a bar called Comstock Saloon, which they serve food. And they're going to open yet another restaurant in the South of Market area that we call Soma in the fall. So they're expanding. If they're the original ownership group, I'm not sure. I think so, but I'm not sure.
This young man, Ian Becker, it's Becker, right? Ian Becker.
Yes.
He has to have a good knowledge or handle on Excel spreadsheet. He's got to have all these wines in inventory under Excel. What a tremendous inventory to have to deal with and pay taxes on and manage everything in a temperature-controlled room and all that kind of stuff. I mean, besides the fact that they have a mess load of wines, are the people serving it on the floor of the servers well-informed?
Yes, they do seem as if they've been well-trained. And Ian Becker is a young man who, to me, doesn't even look like he's 30 years old, although I just found out this morning he's a little older than that. And he is the wine director for both, I think maybe for the whole group, but he is on the floor at Absinthe, and he is also on the floor at the wine shop at Arlequin. And I visited there after I had lunch, and he is just an amazing young man who knows his stuff. There are no signs on the floor in the wine shop directing you to various sections and wine regions. There are none whatsoever, except for one sign that says wines $15 and under. And there's where you can find some really good bargains. I found some Ayanicos, and I found some Cahor. They're just some beautiful wines. And he knows the shop inside and out, doesn't need any signs to get around, and he loves to guide consumers around the shop and pointing them in the right direction.
So, in fact, that's probably part of the reason for not having signs, is they're forcing the consumer to engage with him on the floor.
Yes, and he's not the only one on the floor, but he's the main guy. And yes, I imagine that is the rationale for that.
When you went there, were there other people in the shop? Were there other people in the restaurant at lunch? Was it busy?
Well, I was there for a late lunch on a Friday. And so Friday in San Francisco is people leave work early to have late lunch or to to start their weekend early drinking. And so I got to Absinthe at 2:00, and it's a rather large restaurant, and I would say it was more than half full.
Wow.
And when I left, it remained so, like at 3:30, and then I went over to the wine shop, and there were lots of people in the cafe there.
Okay.
Most, I guess, were drinking coffee.
Okay.
And the wine shop seemed to be a buzz. There were a good half dozen or more people it's a small shop and very tight aisles, and it was buzzing.
So you say that the dinner menu has morphed. It's not what it used to be. But if you're a Francophile, the lunch offering is more classic, like cassoulet confit et soupe de poisson?
Well, they just introduced an entree of the day at lunch that they call the classic. That they call the classics, and those are the classics brought over from the way Absinthe used to be.
Okay.
So yes, it's all of those dishes that you just mentioned, but it's just one entree a day at lunch.
Did you, in fact, order the pastrami sandwich?
Or no.
Then what did you order? What did you eat?
No, my Jewish grandmother would roll over in her grave.
Yes.
If I did that. No, I did order a decidedly not French appetizer, a ceviche, which was just beautifully balanced with chilies, I don't know what kind of chilies, and citrus.
And you had that with the Grüner Veltliner?
Yes, and it just went marvelously with the Grüner, which in itself was also citrusy and fairly medium-bodied, and so it filled the palate, and it's a very substantial wine. And then I ordered one of the classics, the Poisson, which was also really good fish flavor, albeit a little too salty, and I ordered the wrong wine with it. I ordered a fairly substantial red, a Côte d'Aron, a 2010 La Corançon, which was, into itself, was really good, smoky and full of blackberry fruit and had licorice on the finish, but did not go with the soup. But that's on me. I just chose the wrong wine. And sometimes that's what you do. You can't hit a home run every time.
It was probably fun for you also to be able to catch the fact that the wine that you ordered was the vintage was wrongly marked.
Oh, yeah, that was on the Grüne Feltliner.
Yeah.
I jumped all over it because it was marked as a 2006. And I said to myself, wow, an 06 Grüne? You never see that on a list. And so I ordered it, and there it was. It was as bright as could be, rather than having any kind of browning as an older white wine would take on that patina. And I tasted it, and it was as fresh as can be. And I commented to the person I was having lunch with. I said, "This has got to be a typo. I'm sorry, it's not a 2006." And with that, Ian walked over and introduced himself, and then we had a discussion about it. And I told him that I think it was mismarked, and of course he was shocked.
Yeah.
And he left and came back a few moments later and said, "Indeed, it was a 2012." And by the time I left, it was already changed on the list.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Alan Goldfarb, we thank you so very much today for turning us on to Absinthe and Arlequin in Hayes Valley. And this will be up on Table Hopper, right?
Yes.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Lynn.
You're listening to iWine Radio.